The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
I am actually joined by somebody that you guys may know and love. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rick Cheddar.
Good morning.
Right.
Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday, man.
First Saturday of the new year.
Yeah. Nice jeans.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Jeans, really.
Well,
I went down that hole. I needed some new pants, and I was over at the Target over here, and I was over there actually just to get some groceries because they have a nice little selection of groceries over there.
You know?
And I was picking up some stuff for the house, and I just needed some few things, and I thought, you know, while I'm here, let me go over to the pant department.
The pant department that's next to the motor oil. Sorry.
It's not actually not terribly far from there, really. It's over there by the electronics. But at any rate, I go into menswear, and, you know, they have the, you know, racks and stuff, and they had the shelves where because jeans, they put on shelves. They don't put them on racks.
Right.
Because they're folded up and they're ready
and
to go.
Yeah.
And they have all sorts of different styles and flavors and whatnot. And I found my size and I grabbed this pair and I thought, okay, I just got it for the look of it, you know, because it's a nice shade of blue. It's not new where you're walking like John Wayne for a while. I thought, okay, these will do. They were on sale. I threw them in the cart and off I went.
Okay.
And when I got home, I tried them on, make sure that everything was groovy because, you know, men don't try on clothes in stores.
Well, no, they should.
We should. You're right.
You really should.
We should. But since I'm down here all the time, if they didn't fit, I'd just bring them back and swap them. You know,
right.
It wasn't that big a deal. So I got home and I put them on, and I was kind of blown away by the fact that these are Levi pants.
I know.
And they're stretchy pants. I was like, wait a minute, because when I went to fasten the front, I felt the whole waistband move, and I went, holy cow, this is awesome. This is fantastic. So I'm wearing dad jeans now. I just celebrated a birthday the other day.
Happy birthday.
I've gotten older now, and you know, there's a thing about middle-aged guys wearing jeans. It's supposedly sort of frowned upon, I guess.
There is.
But there's also a market for guys like me that still wear them.
There is.
And I'm wearing those pants. They're the Denizen pants from Levi's.
Nice. That's nice, cool material and stuff.
And it's comfortable. It feels like every time I sit down, my ass is going to fall out of it.
Actually, just because you guys are tuned into American Memphis around the world, I'm always throwing out tips and stuff. And, you know, image is the thing. The jeans look great, and you know what's really cool about that material is that it stands the test of time in terms of the way it looks and stuff. You know, the only you know, suggestion is that that's the stuff that you wash in cold, wash it inside out.
Yeah.
Okay, and make sure you hang it up. Do not dry it, because if you dry it, it will shrink in the wrong places.
Well, I don't need all that, because it's fairly snug in some spots as it is. It's like, well, hello, I'm getting groped by my pants.
Well, you just celebrated a birthday. Happy birthday. I left you alone on that day. It was the first year in like 8 years.
Which, you know, it's another trip around the sun. You know, it's another day. I wound up, you know, I was here for a bit, and then, you know, of course, I did the show. I did some stuff, and then I wound up leaving here and ran a bunch of errands. One of which was to re-up my blood pressure medicine. I had to go.
Why are you trying to make this sound like it's old? I mean, you're talking about dad jeans, you're talking about blood pressure. What the hell?
It's not that big a deal. I'm 53, but it's, I don't feel it, you know?
No, well, you don't look it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I look more like about 65, but and at night, we had a nice quiet evening at the house, watched some TV, I had some cocktails, and, you know, went to bed, and there it was.
I did
some stuff at the home studio, Studio A.
Yeah.
I've renovated it, and I renovated the technical end of it, not the physical room, and I'm making a few little changes over there, which Studio A is kind of, well, it was the first studio that the station was in.
Yes, yes.
And
by virtue of default, yes.
By virtue of default. And what I use it for now, of course, I produce, it's a radio production facility.
Okay.
It's not, I say it's a recording studio, but I don't bring bands in there. It's a radio production facility. It's a place to do vocals. It's a place to do commercials, podcasts, that kind of stuff.
Right,
and I've made some changes to some software and some hardware in there.
Okay.
And that has become kind of a de facto testing ground. So what works there I can translate it well and put it onto the air here,
right?
As far as technical ends of it. So I've got some stuff that's coming that's going to make things a little bit easier for everybody that sits in your seat,
right?
As far as bringing more of the Skype element or the Google Hangout element in,
right?
Laptops, love them or hate them, they have that proprietary thing about them. And one such thing, there was a time when you would buy a laptop and it would have 2 1/8-inch plugs in it. One was for your headphones and one was for an external mic.
Sure.
Well, what they've done now is they've combined that into one plug, and that creates kind of a problem for guys like us that want to do a Skype thing.
That want to do a lot of other crazy cool things, yes.
Which, kind of cool, there's an industry that has followed up right behind this that creates cabling and doodads and adapters that solve those problems that radio programmers are looking for.
Nice.
And it's inexpensive. It's very expensive. So I wound up getting a very special adapter that's coming in. It plugs into the actual 1/8-inch headphone. It's a multi-port jack is what it is.
Okay.
Think of it like the same thing like with your headphones for your phone.
Right.
That has the microphone on it as well, so you can take phone calls while you're listening, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Well, that takes a special cabling unit for it. And there's an adapter that has that end that goes into the computer, and then it splits into 2 1/8-inch in one's headphones, one's microphone.
Oh.
And then we run another pair of specialized cabling back into the board, and you can create what is, it's technical, I know, but you create what is called a mix minus.
Yeah.
So you can have them on the air through Skype,
okay,
as an example. They can hear you through that microphone.
Right.
And you can hear them through your headphones. And they can hear whatever you want to feed them, whether it's on air or however that works.
Okay.
And that way you're not having to scream into the lid of the laptop and all that
other stuff. You're not having to do what we had to do in the past a couple of times, right, that, you know, speaking of Down Under, that I did with Darren Cherry, you know, from Greystone Canyon.
And this show, what you're doing here, prompted me to really look into that.
Thank you. Okay, so here's there. You guys heard it. You heard it. I'm so happy.
Well, technology moves pretty quick.
It does.
Radio Memphis, not so much.
Yes, we do.
We do. We're pretty nimble for what we are.
We are very nimble for what we do, and you know, and
we're not like some bloated commercial station.
No, no, and you know, and it's the funny thing is that we're like the MacGyver of radio stations, though. You know, we try to, you know, try to figure it out, and we try to, you know, kind of make things, you know.
Thankfully, the podcasting industry has driven a lot of this.
Well, yeah,
because there's a lot of people out there that say, I don't want to spend, you know, $50,000 on equipment that I've already got most of the stuff. How do I adapt it to make it work? And that was the spirit that went into Radio Memphis 8 years ago,
right?
7 years ago, seven right. and a half years ago. So, there's, you know, by putting it together virtually that way,
right?
It, you find that you're only limited by your own imagination at this point,
right?
And not, you're not limited by massive amounts of money.
No,
you know,
and that was the thing, you know, and for us making sure that we had certain things in place and certain tests in place. Speaking of tests,
yes,
I heard you like air checked me.
I have.
Why? Do I suck?
No.
like, dude.
One of the things you do as a programmer is you have to pay attention to every second of programming that occurs around the clock.
Yes.
Physically, I can't sit there and listen to this radio station 24 hours a day before I'd want to blow my brains out.
Contrary to popular belief, right?
I'm fully conscious of what's happening, but it, a lot of this started with the idea that I needed to pay attention to the external programming that we are bringing in.
Right.
Shows like The Gossiping Heifers, Spud Goodman. I've been air checking Spud for a while.
Right.
And I've been in touch with his executive producer a couple of times about some things that had happened that most people wouldn't have caught.
Right.
For example, they sent a show to us that was split mono instead of stereo.
Right.
And I asked Lori, their EP, about it. I said, something up over here, because usually this is in a clearer stereo field. What's going on? So no, they had to move to a different facility temporarily, and they were working on a completely different set of equipment, and they were working it out the kinks. But at least I understood what was going on, because you are judged as a radio station. You are judged by the quality of your sound.
Yes.
We don't have, contrary to popular belief, this is not a television station. People might think it is, but right. it's not. This is radio. And most of our people listen to us through TuneIn
yes.
or straight through our website
right.
Through the audio-only feed. Because that way they can either plug in their earbuds or Bluetooth into a speaker and set it and forget it. Or they're listening to us through Alexa
right.
or any of that, the Google Play thing, whatever.
Right.
We're what radio has always been.
Yes.
It has been a cornerstone of someone's day or night, right? For just a few hours at a time. No sure. one's ever designed to sit down and listen to this thing for 12 hours straight. Some do, but it's very rare.
Right.
So I have to pay attention to what's going on. So I'm listening for how our imaging pieces fit, how Joel is sounding through some of our tweaks in the software, our right. technical stuff. But I'm also listening to what the jocks are doing.
Right.
So I'm hearing about what, you know, how it is that you're handling the mic, how it is you're handling interviews, time management,
right.
you know, that kind of stuff. You know, is it a tight board? Is it a loose board?
Right.
You know.
I was like, time manager, like, ugh.
Well, okay, everybody adds improvement. And to be fair, I even air check myself because I have to because right. you know how it is. You're sitting here, you're doing your thing, you get too close to the joke.
Right.
You do. But when you give yourself 24 hours and you go back and listen to what you've done,
right.
you immediately go, oh, damn, I need to fix this, and this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good, positive criticism.
It is.
The Thursday night show with Tundria and Gerald, the live music hour, mm-hmm. I pay a little extra attention to that as well because, I mean, to be honest, they're not radio people. They didn't come into the business, neither did you.
Mm-mm.
But they've been trained, and they understand how to do it, and they do a fine job of that show. Right. It's a great show.
Right.
But, you know, bringing them the use of our PA system for a live band that's in here, mm-hmm. I've shown them how to do that. So that just makes it instead of everybody being way off mic and, you know, and trying to play and perform, where we can extend our mic reach a little bit and give us a little technical end to make the station sound like it should.
Sure.
There is leeway with the audience that they understand. Audiences understand. Fans understand. It's a live setup. Right. So it doesn't need to be polished. It just needs to be cool. It needs to be it has to contain good content.
Right.
And that's kind of what the air checking thing is about. So when you're talking about whether it's the technical aspects of it or are people on the air presenting material.
Right.
Is it worthy of what the audience is interested in listening to?
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm looking at.
Okay.
That's the whole, and okay. I went through it for years.
I know you did, you know, and, you know, for all intent and purposes, you know, and for everybody that's tuned in, you know, you are tuned into Radio Memphis around the world. And I'm sitting here, you know, with my partner in crime, who absolutely is actually the creator and the owner of Radio Memphis. So it's kind of funny that we're even sitting down having this conversation, you know, for lack of better words.
We needed to do this. I mean.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's funny because, you know, being, you know, I've always been around the business and stuff like that, but obviously being behind the mic and stuff was something I never intended to do. And, but you know, when we joke about the deal about air checking, because I remember the times as far as with terrestrial and stuff, and as far as, you know, the careers and stuff. And it was a thing that it was like a monthly, you know, biweekly, whatever. I mean, everybody was getting air checked, you know, and it was like, and yeah. it was, I mean, we're talking fierce. And as, sitting on this side of the business, you get a little warped in the head about it, you know what I mean? Yeah, a little cryptic about it. But at the same time, there was a reasoning behind all of that. And so, you know, you explaining it, you know, was to really, you know, come down to the understanding that, you know, there had to be a certain quality about what was going out, and there had to be a certain quality about, you know, what was happening. And that's one of the things that, you know, especially, you know, in the now times when everybody that's got a computer or a laptop and, you know, a you know, whatever mic, and, you know, they can sit down and crank some things out, you know, they don't necessarily understand, you know, the quantum physics behind the idea of an air check, let alone radio. Yeah,
for a jock that is working for a station,
right?
And all that jock is doing is, you know, their shift or their number of shifts that they have,
right?
Whatever show that they're working, and they know they're being air checked. There is that mindset that comes into play, and it's unintentional, but it's kind of a positive side effect in that you all of a sudden, every time you reach to turn that mic on and do your bit, that you're only as good as your last show anyway.
Okay.
But I always approached it was, I'm doing this because I had to record my own. And this is, we had cassette systems that would only come on until you push the on button for the mic.
Right.
They were triggered. Nobody needed to hear the damn song. They all got it. But they were interested in what you were doing on the air. But I always approached it, and my mindset is, okay, this is resume tape material. Because sure, if I get blown out of here, at least I have a demo that I can take to another station.
Right.
So that helped me improve. But also it gave me the ability to go back and listen to it and go, okay, I really needed to stop this habit, or, you know, try this, speak a little more fluidly, don't be so scripted, don't sound scripted, don't say stupid shit on the air, you know, that kind of stuff.
What happened? And I'm scared.
I know, right? I didn't think I would have learned my lesson. I would like to think that in the past 7 years or so, I've actually grown as a broadcaster because of this.
Well, yeah, I mean,
because I've been working kind of without a leash. And
I know, and it's so scary.
It is. And for a guy like me who's done it all of his life, when you finally have that freedom, you realize, oh, I can do all of these wonderful things. A, they're not wonderful.
No.
And B, the guys that I worked with in the past that reeled me in were for the most part correct.
Right.
And you learned before corporate got involved and really screwed up the radio industry, when it was just our little family on the air doing our thing, and right, all of us were trying to, you know, have fun and make good radio
and make some magic happen. Well, yeah.
And screw corporate. They were just the bean counters.
Right.
You know, we were doing their bidding by providing content they could sell.
Sure.
It felt a little more freeing for me here to say, well, okay, all of those guys were wrong, but they were wrong on some levels, but not entirely. Everybody has their own point of view. There's a science and a magic behind programming.
Yes.
Radio station programming.
Yes.
We approach it here a little differently than most stations, in that it's more of, let's throw everything in a pot and then yak it out in a non-specific order.
No, not at all. I mean, a lot of it when we actually try to sit down, you know, especially you and I, and we're trying to, you know, map out the universe. It magically and organically falls in a list of as you know, an intent at that moment.
Sure.
And it fits that moment.
Sure.
You know, for something like that. You know, and it's funny that, you know, when you're talking about, you know, radio and stuff, and I was having this conversation last week on the show. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, and you and I have had this conversation of, you know, real radio. And of course, and I tell everybody this, you know, because everybody is so conditioned to, you know, AM, FM dial radio, you know, terrestrial radio. And that's it.
20 years of that.
And it'll do that. You know, that's what ultimately you're going to kind of come into your head with. But just to bring it up to now status, you know, it can be anything. It could be on Alexa. It could be on Google Home. It could be on your laptop. It could be on
Facebook
your phone.
Facebook Live, that's another new platform that's starting to get into programming.
Absolutely.
I wish they wouldn't, but...
And they don't need to. But and regardless of what the platform is, I mean, the actual formula of what, you know, the basis of the radio, you know, you could say the word podcast. I don't care. You know, it's still radio to me.
Yeah, I don't like that word podcast.
I don't either because I think it dumbs it.
It dumbs it down, I think partly, but it also, I think it's inaccurate.
Right.
The idea was that you were quote unquote broadcasting to a pod of listeners.
Mm-hmm.
It's on demand. It's a recorded show, for God's sake. Let's not get it more complicated than it really needs to be. And anybody that sits there and go, I want to create a podcast, do it. Mm-hmm. Go out there and try it and see what it's like.
Well, yeah.
It's
on more than three occasions.
It's a more than eye-opening experience for anybody, sure, who's never been in this business.
Sure.
But having said that, radio is still radio.
Radio is still radio. Now, one of the things that you and I've always agreed on to, the essence of what radio was created for. Now, radio and the ability to have radio was created so that it was a service to the general public. Okay. And so that in order to be a service to the general public, it had to be accessible,
sure,
to the general public. Now, and I was talking about this last week on the show, you know, we talk about the subscription, you know, services, you know, and things mm-hmm. like that. And I even made a comment about one of the services and stuff like that, that, you know, people do subscribe to, paid subscription for, but they were cool about, you know, trying to pay out artists and stuff. And so, I mean, it was one of those, like, I'm not knocking anybody in the knees sure. on what they've got going on. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, it kind of makes sense. What makes sense is maybe what are the aggregators and who's behind them pushing that whole idea. That being said, you know, the thing for you and I know when you're talking about people that are having to, you know, to pay for a service, you know, the ideas of what great content and good programming get skewed. Okay, for lack of better terms. And, you know, the concept of what we do was always, always, always supposed to be supported by, you know, ads, advertising, right. you know, and slots and stuff like that, and paid spots and stuff, you know, for commercials and things like that. So that, you know, and the competition came in where everybody, you know, that was doing those shows or doing, you know, their presentations or airing whatever it was they were airing, you know, had to be, you know, had to come to a certain caliber and had to step up to the plate. Now, when you're paying for a paid subscription and stuff like that, you know, you've locked yourself into a contract of you are going to deal with whatever it is they put on. It.
That's right.
Versus this is for you. And you know, it's like a performance. It's like a band performing. You know, we're gonna give you the best damn show that we can. We're gonna give you something you like. Cool thing about what we do is that, you know, you try to do something that a little bit of everybody, you know, will like. So, you know, there's different stuff that goes on. There's different programming, there's different styles or different shows, different genres.
Well, there's podcasts out there that do, like, I use Radioland as an example that is really nothing more than a repeat of part of the blues show,
right?
And a bit of a monologue, and I run commercials in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do that. That's a once a week show.
Sure.
I could, in theory, and I thought about doing this, is that on, say, Wednesdays, I release a very special 1 hour show
mm-hmm.
of content that you wouldn't get anywhere, not on the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
It's created solely in Studio A.
Mm-hmm.
It may not even be affiliated with Radio Memphis at all, and make that premium content. And charge. You want to hear that? You got to pay for that. And there's no ads within it.
Mm-hmm.
I've dabbled with that idea because there's a model that does work. The problem with advertisement, and this, and you and I know, both know this, we've had right. these long discussions about this.
Right.
The corporate advertisement machine that exists out there, the agencies and whatnot, they have glommed onto social media as being the end all to be all. Okay. Mm-hmm. Facebook being the prime example of this by using targeted geocentric advertisement.
Mm.
And you and I went through a thing with the company I'm not going to name that had shown deep interest in getting involved with us.
Sure.
Where we were going to see a lot of money coming in here.
Sure.
The caveat was that we had to surrender our data to this company
mm-hmm.
so they could target the listener, whether they're in Denver or Seattle or New York, to ads specific to them. We would not know what those ads were.
Correct.
But they would. And then we would be paid per blah, 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 whatever the technical crap that was. And the second they started talking about, we need to install specific software. And I said, whoa, you ain't installing shit.
Mm-mm.
Pardon my language, but that's how this went down. I'm mm-mm. like, You are now going to take the audience that we have spent all this time developing.
Correct.
And now you want to own that and pay us access to very specific pockets of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's wrong. That's incorrect. And it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work because, you know, when you've got a company and there's a lot of them that have popped up that are geared towards, you know, trying to, you know, be the, you know, be the liaison as for, you know, ad placement and stuff like that. You know, what these guys are doing is that they are simply looking at a spreadsheet and they're simply looking at numbers and they're saying, okay, you know, this is where it's going to go because, you know, by math and by the magical formula, you know, of, you know, radio that this is or whatever, that this is where you're going to get, you know, the most exposure. Therefore, you're going to, you know, we can, you know, guarantee, you know, this kind of return and all of a sudden it becomes, you know, very mathematical and it becomes very cold and it becomes very, you know, non-personal.
Yeah.
And you know, the problem is that, you know, for true programming, when you're talking about, you know, a station like us, is that, you know, you have to have that sense of emotional appeal that you understand that we don't do, you know, for the client. Now, I mean, we're not even talking about our programming, our content, or even the audience's choice. We're talking about the client and saying, you know, we care about you and your product. Okay.
Oh, sure.
So therefore, we're going to make sure that we're not going to put, you know, two beer commercials right next to each other in the same slot.
Right.
We're going to make sure that we're not going to put, you know, and we're going to do, you know, we're going to do, you know, all of those different types of things. I mean, we're also going to, you know, make sure that, you know, we are not, you know, into something that we're talking about and that, you know, that particular company, you know, may be representing, you know, a different idea, you know, and it could be just something based off a conversation coming out of the slot. You don't know this. We do, because we're in charge of our content. We are in charge of our programming.
And we are damn greedy about that.
Well, and you should be. Anybody who's got that ability to do so should be.
Here's an example. And everybody knows this. Everybody's experienced this. You're shopping for a particular item online, right? Amazon is a good example. And this just happened to me. I was buying some cabling on Amazon. I made the purchase, you know? It's being shipped. It's on its way.
Right.
Today, in my social media feed, were ads for those cables.
Of course.
And it's like, y'all missed the boat. I've already done this. This is wasted advertisement.
It's the same thing for bands.
Yeah.
That turn around, they hear like the latest from Shinedown. I say them a lot because, you know, they've thrown
That's
a lot
a good
of boxes.
Example, yeah.
But they hear them, they're like, I'm going to be just like them so I can be big. It's been done.
It's done.
If you are already trying to fashion yourself after somebody, you are already, you know, 20 steps behind. It's been done.
When Stevie Ray Vaughan died, every guitar player in the world wanted to play like Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Of course.
And we're like, it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
Move along. There were a couple of guys that were okay at it. That was really
bad. Yeah, well, and I mean, look, this goes back to...
Thankfully, that fad faded.
Well, right. I mean,
Stevie Ray be Stevie Ray.
Let him be Stevie Ray. I mean, of course, if you want to inspire, you know, inspire to be like him as a be yourself. That's one thing. And
follow
it's great.
Follow his work ethic.
You know, and
put cocaine in your whiskey before you drink it.
No, stop it. God, the hell.
That's what he used to do.
Well, I understand that, but, you know.
Hey, look, to be fair, he died on the anniversary of his sobriety. Did you know that?
No.
He
I didn't even realize that.
He had quit drinking and all the drugs. He got clean and sober, and exactly the year to the date from his decision to go clean and sober, he got killed in that helicopter crash. Isn't that something?
Oh, that's a little...
It changes things a little bit.
It does. It does. It's
not
almost...
Not really. I mean, there's nothing mystical about it.
There is.
It just happened.
Why you gotta be so, like, negative?
Oh, so, well, if you're saying it's mystical that he died on the anniversary of sobriety, perhaps if he wasn't sober, he'd have survived it.
Yeah, because that's more hell than actually being able to die and go where you need to go.
There's that.
You know? Think about it.
Yeah, there's that.
Okay.
But, nevertheless, and I'll use Radio Memphis as an example, because, quite frankly, I'm this is the only thing I can speak of with any authority, is that... And I'll get into AM and FM here in a bit, because there's some really, really horrible things that are happening to those people. But let's just say, for example, that in a given 24-hour period here at Radio Memphis, we have 500,000 people tuned in in, say, the U.S. and Canada.
Mm.
Okay, that's fair. It's not far from the truth, but that's about right. And I go to an advertiser, a potential advertiser, and I say, look, I can give you 500,000 people in a 24-hour period, and I'm going to sell you 30-second spots about 6 or 7 times a day to say whatever you want.
Right.
Isn't that far better than saying, well, I only want the people that are looking for trucks, or I only want the people that are looking for guitar strings, or they narrow it down even further. I only want to look for the people that are looking for 1/8-inch cables to 1/4-inch monos. You know, that's what targeted advertising has turned into in social media.
Mm.
And these ad agencies have jumped onto this going, oh, this is the best thing in the universe because it just sells itself. No, dumbass, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
You got 500,000 people. Shotgun your stuff, okay? Think of it this way. You're standing on the bank of a small lake.
Right.
And about 30 feet in front of you is a stick that's sticking up out of the water, right?
Right.
And you got a handful of rocks in your hand, and you throw them one at a time trying to hit that stick.
Mm.
You're not going to do a good job of that.
No.
If you take a handful of those rocks, you throw them all at the same time, about 3 or 4 of them are going to hit it.
Yeah.
That's the shotgun effect. You can't miss that way.
You can't miss that one.
Yeah, not everybody's going to be looking to buy your pizza slice or your car or your guitar or whatever it is. But there's that you're planning that into their
heads. You're planning it into their heads. And I mean, and the thing about it is that, you know, if I just got a brand new Ford truck, and then all of a sudden I see Ford, it's like, dude.
Too late.
I just bought it. Yeah, I don't have money. I'm not that person.
Right.
If I was, that'd be kind of cool. And but
thankfully. Thankfully, every other internet radio station that has managed to survive.
No, it's been rough.
The 90s and the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. There's only a handful of us.
Mm-hmm.
Are one of our sister stations, NCWZ in Seattle, Tacoma.
Yes.
Where Spud's produced.
Mm-hmm.
They're like us. They've been hanging by the seat of their pants mm-hmm. over there, but they've turned down the similar offers that we've turned down
mm.
with the targeted advertising stuff. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, we'd rather go it alone, because here's why FM and AM is really hurting. Most of them, if not all of them,
okay.
have aligned themselves with affiliations. So you have, say, a Fox station or a CBS station or an NBC station or a Westwood One station.
Right.
So now they're all in the same boat.
Right.
Nobody thinks about the fact that if somebody puts a hole in that boat, all of those stations are going down.
Right.
iHeart is a prime example of that.
Right.
You watch what happened to all.
And it's funny that you bring that up, because radio, media, TV, when they do affiliation, it doesn't work. A light bulb just went off.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm about to expand on that.
Well, it doesn't do the same thing like record labels and indie right. labels and stuff like that, where that idea has to happen in order for artists and careers and stuff like that to go a little bit further and stuff. So it just occurred to me that that's what they thought was going down.
Exactly.
And so, but it didn't work out for them.
No.
Okay.
So what we've seen now, especially over the last 3 years, the rise of what is called indie radio.
Hmm.
Okay, these are unaffiliated radio stations like Radio Memphis.
Yeah.
Now, I don't mind sidling up to somebody like NCWZ with mm-hmm. some of their programming that they're doing. And they do great work, you know. We don't have anything to offer in return aside from airplay, and they're fine with that.
Right.
You know, they're cool. They just love what we do.
Right.
I love what they do. I think it's pretty cool what they're doing. But it's not like we're permanently joined at the hip, or we split everything down the middle. Whatever profits they get, we get half, and, mm-hmm. and vice versa. Mm-hmm. We don't do that like a mm-hmm. lot of corporate stations do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember, for the past 60 years, radio has led, and still does, it leads all media. It's the king of mass media.
It is. It still is.
And it will probably always will be, because it's so simple to consume.
Sure it is.
Whether it's through an actual radio in your car or your phone.
It is.
Or your desktop. It's too easy to get. Now comes rise. This is fascinating. Indie television is coming.
Mm.
And this is going to change a lot of the advertisement game on probably its basest of levels, which is exactly what I've been hoping to see.
Mm.
And when I talk about indie television, I'm talking about people that have, in fact, it was these two guys are college kids out of Utah, out of Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
They created a television show.
Okay.
They shopped it. They created this whole show. They had a GoFundMe. They raised like $90,000 to produce a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
They got the money. They produced it. They took it to these networks, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you would do.
Mm-hmm.
All the alphabets. And they all said the same thing. We love it, but we're going to pass. Two of them have duplicated the show and put it on their networks.
Oh.
And they can't stop it. You can't. It's just the same story. It happens all the time. So what these guys did was say, F you. We're going to YouTube with it. Because YouTube now has a paid service. Right?
Right.
They have their own YouTube channel on like Roku and stuff.
Right.
You get a piece of their advertisement when this happens.
Right.
And now this has given rise to specific indie television channels that are starting to crop up. YouTube is just one space with a billion videos.
Yeah. Now you got to remember something. You know, YouTube is also undergone and under fire at the moment.
The copyright strike thing is complete horseshit, and they do need to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
But what has given rise to this is apps that go onto Roku
mm-hmm.
and Apple TV
mm-hmm.
that are very specific. There's like the trauma app. So if you make trauma films, you know, like the Attack of the Giant Tomatoes or the Killer Tomatoes,
right.
And if you make films like that, there's a good chance they're going to buy it because that's all they have.
Right.
So indie television now is starting to become a thing, thanks to indie radio. Now, us in the radio business have been too stupid to really think about the idea that we should market ourselves as independent radio.
We're not dumb. We did.
Not entirely. Well, we play indie music, yes, but we don't brand ourselves as an independent radio station, even though that we are. Mm. There's commercial. There's public, right? So you have like, you know, we're commercial. There's mm-hmm. public, which is like PBS. Mm-hmm. And then you have listener supported, like Weevil. Mm. Those guys over there, they're having problems. They're having big problems over there.
Yeah.
We're commercial independent. It's not a complicated leap, but to make an advertiser understand that freaks them out. Well, are you with CBS? Are you with Fox? Or what is it that you do? Well, no, we acquire our news from some British group out of London.
Right.
You know, feature
story. We do it all ourselves.
Yeah, we do everything else by ourselves, and we've made arrangements with certain content producers,
right,
to bring us quality material that we run in late night.
And on top of that, then you and I also create content.
Yeah, so we create content, and we do it each and every day. It's hot, fresh, made radio as it happens. What's now happening, though, is that audiences who are slow to react, panicky, dumb animals are starting to realize that there's this whole world outside of those alphabets,
right,
and outside of the numbers on their dial.
Right.
And they can listen to whatever it is that they really want, and they can get whatever they want when they want it.
Right.
That fits their lifestyle, that fits their world. And guess what? It's all independent. It's not being,
every last bit of it is.
And a jock isn't sitting there with a gun held to their head trying to do the right thing, which goes back to the air check thing. Mm. The reason why I do this is to make sure that what we're doing fits into the simple parameters of what I expect as a station owner.
Mm-hmm.
Or as a program director.
Well, sure.
What I would like. I don't need to find out that one of my jocks has done something stupid, like take cash for a record. It's legal to do here, but I refuse that to the point that I will kill you.
Payola is, I mean, whether it's legal or not, to a certain extent, though, it can be brought up on charges for investigation, you know. And
sure,
no, I mean,
it gets into all sorts of weird trouble.
It does. It gets into, look, and, you know, going to that, back to that idea, though, I mean, there are...
I know broadcasters that do it. I know one of them here locally that does it.
Still?
Yes. And it's not cool.
Do I know?
Yes, you do.
Really? Okay, I don't want to know. Don't tell me. So we got off here.
tell me all about it.
I'm just gonna be like, what? No, you know,
I've known a guy who went to prison for it, but that's a whole different story. That was years ago.
Okay, I know who that was.
Yeah.
When you're talking about, you know, when you're talking about as far as programming, I mean, for me, okay, you know, because we're in the middle of Radio Memphis around the world, on this particular show especially, you know, I'm very, very industry, you know, oriented. I'm very geared, you know, as far as to music, you know, what's up and coming and stuff like that. You know, to a certain extent, you know, I'm very geared toward, you know, not even just music that's supposed to sound incredible and awesome, you know, on radio, but just, you know, talent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for it. And, you know, these groups and these, you know, these bands and stuff, especially when they're affiliated with indies and even some majors for that matter, you know, they've got, which is a conversation that we even had at some point last week, is that, you know, you still got the A&R and stuff that are outwardly and marketing and managing and stuff like that, that are outwardly making those relationships again, you know, with certain platforms, which, I mean, that's not a new idea.
No.
But that's what should have already always kind of happened to a certain extent, you know, and it was actually being able to present an artist or present a, you know, a piece and go, Rick, what do you think? Would you play this? You know, would you talk about this? You know, because I trust you, and I know that you know talent. I know that you know talent. Will you play this? Because if you play this, then everybody will sit there, you know, or Radio Memphis will play this. You know, everybody will think it's awesome. It's great.
Well, even that you have to be kind of careful with.
Mm-hmm.
Because in 2011, when we went on the air, we had to grow a library pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
Mm-hmm.
And the scope, that's why we have the whole thing about don't suck.
Right.
Because that's a subjective term.
Right.
But it was a catch-all, and it's there by design.
Right.
Because that scope of not sucking could be pretty big.
Sure.
Now, 7.5 years in, nearly 8 years in, that narrowed the funnel down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we've got to be pretty picky because we get tons of email. We get tons of stuff that come in here. I can't keep up with it. I really can't.
Right.
You know, because I've got a lot of other irons in the fire, and it's no big deal. I'm not going to make excuses about it, but I do want to take the time to kind of savor this for a minute. And then what used to be yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, is now yes, no, 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 maybe. That maybe pile gets kind of big.
Mm-hmm.
So I will often put stuff in that maybe pile to come back to and revisit in a different state of mind.
Sure.
I may have gotten a traffic ticket on the way into work, so I'm pissed off, and I'm going to sit there and I'm going to take it out on some kid that sent their stuff in. That's not fair.
No, it's not.
Or I might be sitting here having three or four cups of coffee. I'm wound up. I'm ready to go. This is great. Oh, yeah, everybody come get and join the party. No, that's not going to work either.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times there's a second, third, and often a fourth listen to some of this stuff. Or if it's really questionable, I'll say, I kind of like it, but I'm having issues with this. I'll call you in on this and say, right, what do you think of this? And we've had a few tunes, and we go, okay, they were great up until the first verse, and then it went to hell. And it's unfortunate, but that's the way.
Yeah, and, the thing about it is that, we get to come across a lot of, awesome potential talent. And if they
potential is the key, yeah.
And if they had the opportunity for somebody to lend ears to something like that and go, hey, you know what, this idea that you had, if you kind of zone in on this is actually, your honey hole right here, on something like that.
I don't give constructive criticism to acts anymore because of an ugly incident that occurred with an artist.
Mm.
They had sent a track, and they said they didn't ask for consideration for airplay.
Mm.
They asked for constructive criticism about the song. What I thought about the song, what I thought about how it was produced, how the song was written, how, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And I wrote back. I said, there was a few issues. I think, I forget what it was, but it was something like the bass guitarist was out of tune. The drummer was not on the click.
Mm-hmm.
Lead vocals were slightly out of tune, a little pitchy dog, that kind of stuff. And it wasn't recorded cleanly.
Mm-hmm.
Take all that back and work on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy responded to me by telling me how I didn't know what the hell I was talking about, and ended the email with F you.
Nice.
So it's like, you asked for my criticism. I wasn't like being a dick about it. I was like, look, if I were you, I would work on these things.
Right.
I spent like 30 minutes writing this guy an email going, how to be cool about it. Because most musicians, they're like, well, what do you think? You say, well, man, have you thought about maybe adding a second guitar part here, or doubling this, or backing that solo off, or work on the pitch on the vocals? How about some harmonies? The harmony's a little out of tune. They're like, cool. Okay, we'll go into it, and they do it.
Mm.
But you got a bunch of young yahoos that send this stuff over, and they're looking for criticism.
No, they're not looking for criticism. They were looking for,
hey, I've got to have this.
Well, yeah, no, they were looking for endorsement and on what their idea was.
And I get a critique on it, and never again.
And it's hard. I mean, that part is extremely hard. And, being able to constructively, sit down and say, hey, this is what you've got going on. If you're an artist and you or a band or a performer and you truly are trying to straighten up your game and go where you need to go with this, and you outwardly ask for this advice, you have to be in the frame of mind that you're going to hear what you need to hear, especially when you're asking individuals. Now look, if you ask your mom or your dad, it doesn't matter if you are ugly, you have a wart on your nose, and you have a third eye. Guess what? You are the most beautiful being on the planet.
The ugliest babies I've ever seen are all on Facebook. Ugly babies, man.
No, they're not.
Ugly.
They're not all ugly.
Not all of them, but most of them are ugly. Ooh.
They are not all ugly.
Mercy.
They're not all ugly. That's not true.
That whole thing about God didn't make ugly babies, that ain't true.
That's not, I'm getting ready to, no, that's not it.
Send me a, just a rock. Text that's coming to you. No, I mean, look, we're not in a position here as radio people to entertain ourselves.
No.
We might get lucky and have fun,
right?
We might have a good show. Most of them are not, in my opinion. When I'm involved in them, I might, when I do a show, Booze and Blues is a prime example. I leave here on a Sunday night, usually about between 12:30 and 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
A lot of it is because there's a wind down, because it turns into this wild
juke joint
circus that happens in here, and we have a great time on the air,
right?
And then as I begin to wind down from that and I start thinking about it, I go, okay, that was a great show because the guest was fantastic.
Right.
It wasn't a good show because I was involved in it. No. It had nothing to do with me.
No.
All I'm doing is just kind of steering the boat in the direction I think it kind of needs to go in.
Right.
You know, it should be like this. It should be like that.
Right.
And I've got my own critical mistakes, hence the air check again. And I do that. I, specifically with Radioland, I go back and I listen to those shows and I go, man, what was I thinking asking that question? Or you know, listen to what the guy had just said because you asked him to answer it again. You know,
right.
Because you might drift a little bit. Your mind might wander off. So there, it goes into that self-critique a little bit. And that's another interesting position to find yourself in as a personality, is that you don't want to, and it's easy to do because I've done this for years, and I still slip into it. You can get yourself into self-doubt.
Hmm.
And that can be relatively soul-crushing, and you can't let it do that to you.
Yeah, that's a crazy... messed up place to be.
I've been there many times.
I spent a lot of time there, you know, for a minute.
And
you know, even recently, I mean, even recently, you know.
There's been times I'll wake up in the morning going, I'm going to come to this radio station to do this dog and pony morning show. Does anybody care?
Mm.
Am I adding anything of substance to this world by doing this? Is it worth doing? I still drag my carcass over here and do it, and I usually feel better about having done it.
Right.
But it's still like, wow. You live in this fishbowl and nobody really cares. But that is inherent in the radio business.
Of course.
Because there's no immediate feedback.
There's not. And that's something that, you know, it's kind of hard to get used to. But, you know, back to the talent end of it. That's the part that is a little different for me, for us. You know, as far as for what we do, versus radio that you're accustomed to. You know, what you were accustomed to didn't necessarily allow, you know, for on-air personality to have a relationship.
Oh, it's forbidden, strictly forbidden.
And you know, the beautiful thing is that we are, you know, and we can, and we do.
The hardest thing that I personally had to overcome was the fact that long-form radio not only is wanted by the public.
Hmm.
It's needed.
Yes.
But it has to be done correctly.
Yes.
Which we're doing it right now. This is long form radio. Mm-hmm. If this had been existing on an FM station,
they'd
have dragged us out and beat us.
They would have shot us.
They'd have just shot us on the air. No. And then you'd have heard, you know, Jonathan Livingston Seagull. I mean, it would have been something like that. And there were times that little short hairy shit Tim Spencer would come into the studio and stand up with his hands on his hips.
I don't care. See, this is just you. Just, you know, I was just talking about
this is also the same man who taught me an awful lot.
There's the Buddhist I was looking for.
he did teach me an awful lot. He taught specifically how not to run a radio station.
Yeah.
You know, and how to stand up for the people that work for you. He didn't. And I got to see that, and you know, I went, and I'm not going to elaborate any further on any of this, but I got to watch how he handled the death of a coworker and the sickness of a coworker, and it was heartbreaking. That was it to the point where it angered me, and I there was that, you know, remember when all that happened? God, it was February of 2011,
right?
And you and a mutual friend of ours was on my front porch.
Yes.
Right after he had passed.
Yes.
And we were like, I was lost.
You were lost. Yeah, it was crazy.
I had no job. I had no will to work. I had no creativity mm-hmm. left in me anymore. I felt like
you were mad as hell.
I was mad. I was scared. I was really upset.
Right. And then on top, that was just you. And then you had a crazy, crazy Irish redheaded woman that was ready to just climb the Clark Tower.
She still feels that way.
I know. And yeah, I get it.
She's ready to cut a bitch.
Yeah, she does. She said it in just that manner.
When
too.
We went to the funeral, I've lived my life without regrets. I can tell you that.
I know.
I don't regret anything. except for one thing, that I didn't honor that man's last wishes to me.
Oh, don't do it.
And I'm not going to tell you what it was, but nah. But I had the opportunity to do just that. And there was that little voice in your head to go, don't do this.
Mm-mm.
I should have, because they were both standing right there. I'd have made headlines, but it would have been about me and not about him. And that's not what this is about.
So in terms of you know, and
it's
mind
a
you,
passionate industry,
right? It is, yeah. It is, and you were actually used as an example, you know, for, you know, ultimately what emotionally, that industry, what it did to you, you know, when everything came crashing and burning, yeah, and stuff like that, to a certain extent. And you know, it's funny because there's a lot of people that look at what we do, you know, as far as for radio and stuff, and you're on air, you're a jock, you talk, and then you play music, and
it's so easy, anybody can.
And it's a very simple, you know, very simple, like right. It's, yeah, a very simple concept that they think about it. But at the same token, there is a stage of and a site of performance that winds up happening when you're on air and being able to, you know, talk and speak and conversate and, you know, make the audience feel like they're a part of what you got going on. And, you know, and for somebody like yourself, you know, because I had even referred to you as that, not only do you do this and you own this and stuff and you're going crazy, whatever, you know, you're also an entertainer, a performer, you know, that kind of thing. You know, just to come clean, because I don't know if you listened to the whole air check or not, but
I listened to a good bit of it, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I did throw you under the bus.
Yeah, you did.
I threw you under the bus.
It happens.
It's okay. I just, you know, I figured that I would come clean because, you know, there may be somebody listening, and I just feel a little better that I'm like maybe announcing it in public that I threw you under the bus. Because you were so mad. You were so mad those first 2 years. And, you know, and
oh, it took me a while to deprogram. I mean,
it did.
It was 14 years of Clear Channel. What do you think is going to happen? It's like getting out of a concentration camp and somehow surviving it.
Right.
There's always a part of you that gets destroyed.
Right. Well, and to your credit, I mean, you've been in the business for 35 plus going on 40 years. You know what I mean? In terms of
35, 36 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so it's one of those things like, you know, that was kind of the topping. That's the topping that you got at that point in the game.
That was a Vine. How do you do?
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, ultimately, you know, we were very fortunate that you turned it around and, you know, made a positive motion out of it. And, you know, anger, upset, and scared. Scared does very funny things to some creative people.
Oh God!
If they latch on to the right emotion, it does some pretty, you know, amazing and awesome things. And I'll have to give you that.
I mean, I went 4 or 5 months without even putting on a pair of headphones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are like, I don't do that either. Well, not when I have tinnitus now. Thank you very much because of this. I mean, but that's me. I've done this to myself.
Right.
But when it's abruptly taking out from under you, right?
Right.
Whereas the 18 months before that actually happened, you're sitting there in front of that board with a mic, your name signed onto the log, and a gun held to your head at the same time, figuratively speaking, not literally, of course.
Right.
Where every single syllable was judged.
Yes.
That's not right.
Yes. You know, one of the things that we get to do around here, I tell people, especially when they're being introduced to this whole concept of what it is that we do, and I try to make it real simple so they get it, the full picture of it. And I tell them all the time, I was like, look, dude, it's like WKRP meets Night Flight meets Soul Train.
Kinda.
Okay. And we get to talk too. You know, and you know, the beauty of, you know, the beauty of being able to have that opportunity for expression, but that can actually also be what cuts people's necks, is that, you know, they not understanding the bounds and the parameters. And I always have a problem, I feel like I do, when I'm trying to relay this, especially when I'm talking tips and tricks and stuff like that. Sometimes the stuff I'll say, it'll come out like I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to constrict or constrain, you know, a thought or creativeness and stuff, and I'm not.
Right.
But there are things inherently by what you've done and being in the business for as long as you have, Rick, that you understand what does work.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and this is one
here's,
of...
Here's proof.
All right.
Right before my time in corporate-driven FM radio came to an end. There was those air check meetings.
So what? So
But we met with consultants. They had actually hired a third party.
So they get so they gather all these air checks.
Yeah.
And then they put all the jocks in a room, and like it's
no
like,
no it was one on one.
Okay.
All
right.
But there were times that they would do them all at one time just to make it simple.
Make it painful.
No, just to kind of go through it. And it was pretty brief back in the early days when it was like, okay, listen, tighten up your board here on this. They only had like maybe four or five constructive criticism points.
So in other words, it was like a really good thing, and it was like, hey, try this.
Yeah, go through this, try this, you know, and that was good. And then when corporate got involved and they started bringing in the third-party consultants these are people who had never been on the air and they're trying to tell you how to do your job.
Right.
That last consultant meeting I ever sat in when John Bad Dog McCormack leaned back and said, excuse me, how many years have you been on the air? And he goes, well, I've never really been on the air. And he put his hands on the table and he pushed himself away from the thing and he stood up. You remember, John was a big dude.
Yeah, he was.
And he looked down at me and he goes, stand up, boy. And I stood up next to him and he goes, forgive my language for this. He goes, this fucking meeting is over and you're fucked. You lost your credibility with me. You've never sat behind a mic. You've never spoken to, you know, 1,000 people. You've never done that before. And you're trying to tell me how to do my job? Eat it. And we walked out. He goes, come on, I'm buying lunch.
And you're like, what were you going to do?
I said, hell yeah. I'm with him.
What he said.
And that day we went to the Emerald Thai restaurant.
Oh, see, it was fortuitous that you guys were supposed to be in my world in life. See, you ate Thai food.
Yeah, we ate Thai food right after that meeting. And Tim Spencer was sitting in that meeting and he blew our phones up. We wouldn't answer the phone.
Oh, I wouldn't answer the phone either.
When I finally answered, he goes, do you realize how embarrassing that was? And I went, do you realize how embarrassing and stupid you look? You brought in somebody who never had been in the business to tell us how to do our jobs that we've been doing for years.
You just managed to make the one statement that probably ran the majority of the entertainment business into the ground for a minute.
Bringing people that didn't know what they were doing to tell them how to do it?
Mm.
Oh, that's America.
Mm.
That's what happens now.
Mm.
And it's not just in radio or television or entertainment. It's happening in automotive manufacturing. Elon Musk has been fighting these idiots off of his ass going, you can't make a car like this. And he goes, how many cars have you made? And the guy's like, well, we've never made one. He goes, get the fuck out of here.
Then why are you telling me I can't?
Why are you telling me I can't do this?
Right.
Because he's that kind of cat. If you tell me I can't do it, I'm going to find a way to do it.
He's kind of cool.
He is kind of cool. He's like James Bond.
Yeah, he's like total James Bond, like, you know, 2.0.
Cool.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
I have ways of making you speak.
I know. I almost want to, like, you know, write him and say, hey, I mean, just, you
he's
know.
I get what he's doing. But that's what this country needs. And that's what this industry needs.
It needs more people like
me and you who are able to stand there on our own two feet and say, look, we may not have the perfect thing going. We probably don't.
Hmm.
We're working toward that ideal.
Of course.
But by God, what we do have is strong. It's Absolutely. Powerful. I'll show you the proof.
Right.
We can talk about it till the cows come home.
Right.
And if you guys want to emulate what we're doing here, I'll help you as long as you are not afraid to stand up to the people who will tell you that you can't do it.
Right.
Especially if they've never gotten the people that come into this room and they look and they go, wow, this. I've had radio people come to Bill Bannister. He comes down here and he's like, man. He does it all the time. Man, this is just awesome.
I know, because we even put the little funky vibe to come with it.
Yeah.
It's gotta be that
radio.
Way.
This is radio. This is what it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's not a coat and tie industry unless you're in sales. And even then, loosen up a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have not changed anything in this industry. The only thing that we've done was allowed the audience to tell us what they wanted.
Mm.
And we listened to that.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, we've created long-form radio out of this thing. We're bringing on programming that nobody else would touch.
Right.
Nobody else would
touch.
Right. Now, not that we've reinvented any of that, but we've got to find a way. And this is our weakness. We've got to find a way to look at how the sales into the advertising agencies need to relate to us.
Well,
that's a tough one.
It's not a weakness because there's certain things that's my whole point. is that there were still certain things and certain ideas, you know, that, that ultimately, you know, still worked, you know, to a certain extent. And this goes
relationships, yeah, that's who you know.
Believe it or not, it goes back to air checking.
It does.
this whole
said it now.
This whole conversation.
I don't want to hear another shit now about, well, why are you air checking me again? I don't want to do it.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It was kind of like, I just got air checked. You know, and it was good. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, because you, now you know what that feeling is.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now look at it from the point of view. Now put your management hat on for a minute.
All right. Beat you?
No. No. Think about when word comes back to you that somebody outside of this radio station is air checking you, because they are.
Yeah.
They're air checking you. They're me, Tundria, Joel. All of them. The station is getting air checked. There's somebody listening to this either shaking their head going, what a bunch of idiots. Or they're going, hey, I kind of dig their vibe.
Right.
You know, we want the people that dig our vibe. But I'm also interested in what those people that think that we're idiots. I want to know why they think that we're idiots.
Yeah.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved, and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.